inside the breast pocket of his jacket. If you should think of anything further which may be helpful or discover anything new, please give me a call. You have my card. Of course, Matt assured him, and walked out with the policeman to the hall to find his overcoat and hat. Kitty waited until the lieutenant was out of earshot before rounding on her father.
Honestly, Papa, are you determined to make yourself a suspect? You knew all about the location of the pawn shops, and then you hinted at why Peggy might have used them. Lieutenant Tanfield might start to think she was stealing the silver and pawning it for your benefit, especially after your recent shenanigans.
Her father chuckled and then sobered at the serious expression on her face. Darling girl, really, I don't think so. It's a bit of a stretch, don't you think?
You're the one who said not to get involved in the case and to be careful around these New York policemen,
Kitty pointed out as she folded her arms. Matt walked back into the sitting room.
That was good of the lieutenant to let us know what he'd discovered.
He glanced at Kitty.
It was very good of him, Kitty agreed.
She glared at her father, determined not to let him off the hook quite so easily. He really had been behaving very badly even before they had arrived in New York. He could have sent another telegram to prevent them from a wasted journey or answered his telephone to put her mind at ease. Then, ever since they had arrived and she had discovered the real reason he had been pretending to be at death's door, he had seemed to treat everything as a lark. Even Nora's murder and Peggy's death, once he had recovered from the immediate shock and distress. Now he had somehow managed to entangle himself in the crimes in such a way the police were bound to keep him on their suspect list.
Edgar coughed gently.
I must admit, the lieutenant does seem to be a very thorough fellow. I knew she had a brother, but I wasn't aware that Peggy had any family actually in town.
The letters I saw in her room seemed to be from an old neighbour, but I am certain the address was in Maine. Peggy's brother must have moved to New York when Peggy moved, Matt said.
Lieutenant Tanfield said that he was older than Peggy. He may have moved here first, and then Peggy may have got the job with Nora and followed him. The Depression has forced a good many people to come to the city to seek work from what I've read in the newspapers, Kitty said.
Perhaps he was the person she was writing to the night she died, Matt suggested.
Kitty frowned.
Possibly, but I would have thought a car mechanic would have had a telephone at his workplace. She could have telephoned him instead. Surely she would want to let him know that her employer had been murdered and she needed to urgently find a new position.
We also don't know if they were on good terms, Edgar pointed out. They might not get on.
Kitty caught her father's eye as he spoke, and she sensed this was a subtle reminder at her reproof to him a moment earlier.
Yes, you have a point. It's so annoying that we have no access to any of these people to find out more information, Matt said.
Even though we are definitely not investigating this case.
The corners of Kitty's lips curved up into a slight smile.
No, most definitely not. We are here on holiday, and it's almost Christmas.
Matt smiled back at her as he spoke. She knew that her husband was as keen to investigate as she was, despite his words.
Speaking of Christmas, after supper, there is a carol concert at St. Patrick's Cathedral this evening. It's just off Fifth Avenue, and I think you would enjoy it, Edgar suggested. You know, get us all back in the old festive mood a bit.
Matt looked at Kitty.
What do you think? It would be nice to do something Christmassy.
The church is quite impressive, and it's worth a visit just to see it, Edgar added.
Why not? Kitty agreed, resigning herself to a nighttime trip out into the snowy city.
Still, it did sound rather fun, and they might as well make the most of their stay.
Matt could see that Kitty was still a little out of humour when they climbed into the back of the taxi, ready to set off for the cathedral. She was wrapped up in her furs, and the end of her nose and cheeks were pink with cold.
The snow had stopped falling, but the roads and sidewalks were treacherous, and there were less people about. Edgar was his usual cheerful self and had taken a seat in the front of the taxi. He was busy chatting with the driver about the weather and if he thought the sporting fixtures would be affected. The taxi dropped them off on Fifth Avenue, right outside the huge arched entrance to the cathedral.
"Well, it's certainly impressive."
Kitty looked up, admiring the two huge spires at the front end of the stone building.
"I thought you'd like it," Edgar said in a smug tone.
There were several people already making their way inside the cathedral, so Matt offered his arm to Kitty, and they followed them through the open doorway. Many of the seats on the polished wooden pews that filled the vast interior were already taken. A huge Christmas tree stood at the end of the aisle, and the nativity set was in place. Matt, Kitty, and Edgar took a seat on the end of a pew and gazed about the building. Matt could see it had been modelled in a Gothic Revival style, with arches and vaults, similar to the much older European cathedrals they were used to seeing. Someone was playing the organ, and the music drifted around, mingling with the chatter and occasional cough of the congregation. After a few minutes, the choir, in their red and white robes, filed along the central aisle, accompanied by the priest. The air was scented with incense from the burners as the procession passed by, and after a few words of welcome and a prayer, the concert began. After a few minutes, Matt could see that Kitty had begun to relax and enjoy herself. He knew she had always loved Christmas. Since they had been married on Christmas Eve, it was a special time of year for both of them. She turned her head towards him and smiled. He gave her mittened hand a gentle squeeze. Even his father-in-law appeared to be enjoying the festive music, although why Edgar hadn't spontaneously combusted when he'd set foot inside a church, Matt wasn't certain. He had been a little surprised when Edgar had suggested the outing, but he suspected that his father-in-law wished to make amends to Kitty. The carol concert was a delight, with singing from the choir and participation pieces for the congregation. The concert ended with a moving version of O Little Town of Bethlehem and a blessing. Kitty took Matt's arm once more, and they made their way out of the cathedral, with Edgar following behind them.
"It will be tricky to get a taxi from here with this crowd. Follow me," Edgar said, taking the lead.
They followed him carefully along the street until he turned off into a small, nondescript-looking doorway. Kitty hesitated, and Matt could understand her reluctance to go after him. One never knew with his father-in-law quite where you were likely to end up. Edgar popped back out again when they didn't follow him inside.
"Do come in, Kitty. I promise even that ghastly craven woman would approve of this place."
With that somewhat dubious reassurance, they followed him inside the entrance of what turned out to be a discreet upmarket bar.
"Now then, I say we have a quick round of drinks in here, let the crowd die down, and my chum Johnny will call us a cab,"
Edgar suggested, raising his hand in greeting to the large, smartly dressed bartender. Matt could see the sense in Edgar's suggestion. At least they would be warm, dry, and comfortable. It was better than standing in the dark on a crowded, icy street trying to get the attention of a passing taxi along with all the other concert attendees.
"Very well,"
Kitty agreed, as she drew off her mittens and stowed them inside her black leather handbag. The bar was fairly quiet, with just a few patrons present and a pianist playing popular tunes. The air was slightly hazy with cigarette smoke, and a small Christmas tree stood in one corner.
"Not seen you for a while, Edgar,"
the bartender said, as Kitty's father ordered their drinks.
"No, I was unwell."
Edgar gave a theatrical little cough.
"This is my daughter, Kitty, and her husband, Matthew. They are here for Christmas from England."
Edgar introduced them to his friend Johnny. While Johnny poured them a whiskey and soda, it transpired it had been Johnny who had mentioned the concert at the cathedral to Edgar some weeks earlier.
"I used to be an altar boy there, see?"
Johnny informed them with great pride as he set out the drinks.
Wasn't sure if your pup would want to go, as he's on the other side.
It took Matt a moment to realize that Johnny was referring to Edgar not being Catholic.
It's a splendid building, and the carols were lovely.
Kitty accepted her drink and smiled at the bartender.
Thank you for suggesting it to my father. I think we all feel rather more festive now.
You're welcome,
Johnny informed her and returned her smile. Edgar stayed at the bar, but Matt and Kitty seated themselves at a small round table close by. Matt could see his father-in-law conversing in low tones with Johnny, followed by a discreet exchange of dollar bills. He guessed that Johnny was one of the people who would place bets for his father-in-law, and he hoped Kitty hadn't noticed the transaction.
Johnny will telephone for a taxi for us in about 15 minutes. Just enough time to enjoy our drinks, eh? Bottoms up,
Edgar said, as he took his place at the table before chinking his whiskey glass against theirs. Edgar's plan worked perfectly, and some 30 minutes later, they were back outside their apartment building, having passed a convivial 15 minutes or so at Johnny's bar. It was freezing now, and snow had started to fall once more as they made their way into the lobby. Matt was somewhat surprised to see the concierge desk was empty, with a note saying the attendant would return shortly. He saw Kitty had noticed it too, and guessed that her thoughts mirrored his own. Had the concierge been away from his desk on the night Nora had been murdered? Perhaps that was why no one had seen Nora come down in the elevator and slip out through the service door at the rear of the building. Edgar pushed the brass button to summon the elevator, and far above them, Matt heard the clank and rumble of the cage beginning its descent. The brass arrow above the doors indicating it was returning from the top of the building. When the elevator arrived, it was occupied by Rudolph Briggs, who was carrying two large brown leather valises.
Rudy, dear boy, Lorena not with you? Still, it's a ghastly night to be out and about. We were so sorry to hear about poor Peggy. Must have been the most frightful shock, coming so soon after what happened to Nora,
Edgar said, as he opened the iron fretwork cage so Rudolph and his bags could exit the elevator.
Yes, it was a horrid shock. Lorena is most distressed by the whole business, as you can imagine,
Rudolph said as he stepped out into the lobby.
My word, those look heavy, Edgar said, as the other man hefted one of the bags to adjust his grip on the handle.
Lorena and I were concerned that Nora had a lot of very valuable items in her apartment. With things going missing, and the police telling us that some items had been retrieved from a pawn shop, well, Lorena felt it would be best if we got the most expensive things and took them to our apartment for safekeeping, Rudolph said.
Oh, I quite agree, old chum. The responsibility for poor Horatio otherwise would be most worrying,
Edgar said in a cheerful tone.
Yes, I suppose so.
Rudolph sounded less positive, and Matt guessed that Lorena had been more concerned that Horatio too might help himself to some items, knowing that Peggy would probably be held responsible. It seemed very untrusting of someone who the family had employed for many years. He was certain they had never had cause to question Horatio's honesty before, or the man would have been dismissed years ago.
Have you arranged for a cab to pick you up? Edgar asked.
Yes, it should be along any minute now.
Rudolph started to edge towards the plate glass and brass entrance doors of the lobby.
Do you want us to stay with you until it arrives, dear boy? Edgar asked. I mean, two murders in one building and you carrying all those valuables. I'd hate for you to be mugged.
Matt could tell that Rudolph was a little irked by Edgar's concern for his well-being, but clearly felt compelled to agree since the concierge was still absent from his post.
I take it the police informed you of their discoveries at the pawn shop then?
Matt asked, as Rudolph peered through the glass, looking for his cab.
Yes, they did. Lorena confirmed the swan and the other piece belonged to Nora, Rudolph said.
At least you got those back, Kitty remarked, Edgar told us how much that little silver swan meant to Nora, and I suppose it must have a great deal of sentimental value to Lorena too. I can't think why Peggy would have done such a thing. Do you think she had a gambling or drug problem? She blinked her wide blue-grey eyes at Rudolph.
No, not that any of us knew, Rudolph said.
Or anyone who might have asked her to get money for them, like a boyfriend or family member? Kitty continued. Rudolph shifted uncomfortably.
No, I don't know. I mean, Lorena might know more about Peggy in that way, I suppose.
Oh, you didn't know Peggy that well then? Kitty persisted.
As she spoke, a black cab drew up in front of the building, its headlamps illuminating the semi-dark street.
I'm afraid not. Well, this looks like my cab. Thanks for your help.
Rudolph made a bolt for it through the doors towards the waiting taxi. The bags clanked as he hoisted them out and into the back of the taxi next to him.
Extraordinary fellow, Edgar mused, as they regrouped once more at the elevator doors.
Chapter 12. Kitty awoke with a shiver the following morning to discover the city had been coated with a fresh layer of crisp white snow overnight. She washed and dressed quickly before scampering through to the lounge to turn on the fire. Although the flat had heating, she had been unable to discover how the thermostat was regulated and suspected it was probably set for the same temperature throughout the building. While Matt was dressing and shaving, Kitty made a pot of tea and set the table for breakfast. As she placed the plates and bowls on the table, she glanced at the mantelpiece to check the time. The sight of the cards reminded her that they hadn't checked with the concierge yesterday to see if any post had arrived. She could hear Matt whistling cheerily as he got ready for the day, and decided she had time to nip downstairs to collect any mail and pick up Edgar's morning copy of the newspaper. Kitty pulled on her coat and took the keys from the Chinese bowl on the hall stand before heading down to the lobby in the elevator.
Good morning, ma'am, Enrique greeted her as she approached the desk.
I thought I would see if there was any post for my father and pick up his morning paper, Kitty said, after returning the man's greetings.
Sure thing, ma'am.
Enrique picked up a slim bundle of post and took a neatly folded newspaper to add to the pile.
Oh dear, Kitty said, as she caught sight of the front page. It seems Nora and Peggy's deaths have made the newspaper.
They seem to have caught on to the poisoning, with Miss Peggy being young and pretty and all.
Enrique's tone was sad.
Did you know Peggy well? I suppose she must have come down here quite often, running errands for Nora, Kitty asked.
Pretty well, ma'am. Peggy was a nice lady, very kind and thoughtful. She would always stop and ask how my mother was, or would sometimes bring me a doughnut from the stand down the street. She was good that way, you know,
Enrique said.
The police said she had an older brother here in the city, James, a motor car mechanic. Did she ever talk much about her family? Kitty asked.
She would say she missed her old home, but that she couldn't stay there. There was no employment, and she wanted to see the world. She did say she had a brother. Peggy was real proud of him. She would get excited if he dropped her a note. She wrote to him a lot, but he wasn't much of a writer, I guess.
Enrique gave a slight shrug. Kitty collected up the post and the newspaper.
I noticed there was no one on the desk last night when we returned from the Carol concert. Mr. Rudolph Briggs was here too, taking some things from Nora's apartment, so we waited with him until his cab came.
Xavier was on duty last night, so I figure he was probably fixing himself a hot drink in the kitchen, or maybe was in the bathroom. He's conscientious, so I expect he just stepped out for a few minutes. Sometimes we get called to apartments, too, if something goes wrong.
Enrique started to tidy his desk.
Was he on duty the night Nora was killed? Kitty asked, as she prepared to head back upstairs.
Enrique nodded.
He sure was. He was real upset by what happened. I know he spoke with Lieutenant Tanfield about it.
He told me that he'd no idea that Mrs. Dangerfield had come down and gone out back.
Kitty nodded. I'm sure he must feel terrible. It was dreadful for all of us.
She walked the few feet across the marble floor to the elevator and pressed the call button. While she was waiting for the car to return, the front doors to the lobby opened and a stocky, brown-haired man in his mid-30s entered. He was dressed in navy workman's overalls, a heavy dark blue peacoat, and a twill cap and woolen muffler. He stamped the snow from his boots on the entrance mat and approached the desk.
I've come to collect my sister's things. Miss Peggy Marsh.
Oh, you must be James, Peggy's brother. Kitty Bryant, my father Edgar Underhay knew your sister quite well. He was her neighbour. I'm so very sorry for your loss.
Kitty had turned and approached the man as soon as she had heard his query. She held out her hand for the man to shake, aware that she sounded very English.
Thank you, yes, ma'am. Peggy's death has been an awful shock.
The man removed his woolen gloves, shoving them into his coat pockets before shaking her hand. She noticed the palm was rough and calloused, and there was a faint rim of black engine oil under his fingernails.
I can take Mr. Marsh up to the penthouse, Enrique, Kitty suggested to the concierge. If you could let Mr. Blackstock know that we are on our way up.
Sure thing, Mrs. Bryant,
Enrique agreed, and picked up the telephone receiver to call up to Nora's apartment. Kitty stepped back over to the elevator where the cage was now waiting for them. Peggy's brother opened the gate so she could enter first.
Thank you, Kitty said, as he followed her inside.
He looked tired, with dark circles under his eyes. She couldn't imagine how awful he must be feeling. Mr. Blackstock was Mrs. Dangerfield's manservant.
He worked closely with your sister, as I'm sure you know, Kitty said, as the elevator glided slowly upwards.
Yeah, she wrote some in her letters. She liked a letter, did Peg.
James rubbed his hand across his face.
When did you last hear from her?
Kitty asked, as she saw from the dial that they were approaching the top floor.
A week ago. She wrote every week mostly about where she'd been and what events she was organizing. I'm not much of a writer myself, so I didn't always get to reply. She knew I liked her letters, though,
James said, as they came to a halt outside the front door of Nora's apartment. James opened the door of the elevator and went to step out.
Mr. Marsh, I hope you won't consider this an imposition, but would you like my assistance with dealing with your sister's things? It's just that I know the task will be distressing for you and Mr. Blackstock, and, well, there may be feminine items.
Kitty phrased her question delicately. Her offer was born from both a desire to genuinely assist and also her inbuilt need to snoop. James looked a little surprised at first, before slowly nodding his head.
Thank you, Mrs. Bryant. Yes, if you wouldn't mind, I think Peggy would have well appreciated that.
Kitty followed him from the elevator, and they knocked on the door of the penthouse apartment. Horatio opened it immediately.
Mr. Marsh, come in. Please accept my condolences on your loss. Peggy was a lovely young woman and a valued colleague.
Horatio looked slightly surprised when Kitty followed James inside the apartment after Peggy's brother had acknowledged Horatio's words.
I have offered to assist Mr. Marsh with packing up some of Peggy's most personal items, Kitty explained as they followed Horatio into the large sitting room.
Kitty could see that Rudolph had done a thorough job the night before stripping the apartment of valuables. The lovely bijouterie cabinets were now empty, and the silver-framed family photographs were also gone.
A very generous thought. May I offer you coffee, Mr. Marsh, Mrs. Bryant? Horatio asked.
Kitty thought the manservant had aged overnight. Before, she hadn't thought that he particularly looked to be retiring age, but now there were lines around his eyes and mouth. His shoulders were slumped, and there was an air of dignified defeat about his person.
Thank you, sir.
James said. I set off early this morning and had to take 2 buses to get here, and it's mighty cold outside.
Shall I go and make a start while you warm up? I can pack her clothing and shoes and place any papers and personal items you may need separately, Kitty offered, as she shook her head to decline Horatio's offer of coffee.
Thank you, Mrs. Bryant. I truly appreciate your kindness.
James Marsh sat gingerly on the edge of one of the couches at Horatio's invitation. Kitty sucked in a breath to brace herself for the task ahead and went back along the hall to Peggy's room. Someone, Horatio, she guessed, had straightened the place up. The nightstand had been put back beside the bed and all the broken items had been cleared away. She opened the small rosewood wardrobe to find a large carpet bag on the top shelf, so she took that down, ready to place Peggy's belongings inside. The bag was empty, and Kitty guessed it was probably the bag the girl had used when she had first moved into the apartment. At the bottom of the wardrobe were 3 pairs of shoes, winter ones, summer sandals, and evening shoes. She placed them in the bag first. There were 2 handbags, one a daytime cream leatherette and the other a small silver-beaded evening purse. The evening purse was empty. Kitty turned her attention to Peggy's handbag. Out in the drawing room, she could hear the faint murmur of male conversation, so guessed Horatio and James were discussing Peggy and what had happened to her. The bag held the usual things, a worn-looking leather purse with a few coins and dollar bills. She set that aside for James. There was a lipstick in pale rose, a cotton handkerchief, a comb and a cheap gilt compact. In the silk lining of the bag, Kitty found 2 pawn tickets. These had to be for the items the police had recovered. She removed them to pass to Lieutenant Tanfield. There was also another slip of paper tucked inside that crackled as she removed the tickets. Kitty dug down and pulled out a piece of good quality writing paper. Opening it up, she discovered it was a note. Can't get away tonight, but I'll make it up to you soonest. Rather annoyingly, it was unsigned and undated. Kitty quickly tucked it in amongst the post and the paper she had carried with her from downstairs before continuing with her task. She folded up the meagre supply of clothes in the wardrobe, taking care to check any pockets as she did so. With those packed, she turned to the small chest of drawers in the corner of the room beside the washstand. These yielded nothing except stockings and undergarments, all of which Kitty carefully packed in the carpet bag. On top of the wardrobe were 2 hat boxes. Kitty had to drag the dressing table stool across to fetch them down. They both contained inexpensive straw summer hats. She placed those on the bed next to the carpet bag. Kitty wondered what James would do with the things. Perhaps he had a wife or girlfriend who might make use of some of them. The dressing table drawers held a paperback novel and some toiletries. Kitty added those and the dressing set to the contents of the carpet bag, along with a small cosmetics bag. The final piece of furniture was the nightstand itself. It had been obvious to Kitty that the contents of the cupboards had already been searched. She presumed by the police looking for either a suicide note or something to give a clue to the murderer. There was a chip and several scratches on the nightstand, probably from where Peggy had turned it over when the spasms from the strychnine had kicked in. It was a flimsy, cheap piece of furniture and didn't match the other pieces in the room. Kitty could only assume that, like so many wealthy people, Nora had furnished the servants' rooms with odd pieces from other places. The contents of the drawer were higgledy-piggledy from being knocked over. There was a small, black, leather-bound Bible that looked worn and well-used. Kitty looked inside the cover and saw it was inscribed to a Sarah Marsh. She wondered if it had belonged to Peggy and James's mother. There were a few strands of beads and a cheap costume brooch and bangle, a jar of cold cream and some hair grips. The letter from her former neighbour that Matt had seen was also stuffed in the drawer. Nothing that indicated anything about Peggy's personal life. No photographs of her parents or of her brother. Nothing at all that revealed much of who Peggy had been as a person. Her likes and dislikes, her love life or her past. It wasn't much to show for a life, she thought. Kitty took a last quick glance around the room. There wasn't even an ornament that was personal to Peggy. She wondered if the police may have taken anything, but thought it unlikely. She collected up her own bundle of post and the newspaper and returned to join Horatio and James, who were sitting sipping coffee together. Everything is packed ready for you. I've left her purse out next to the bag of her things and the hat boxes. I am truly sorry for your loss, Kitty said.
Thank you, Mrs. Bryant. I truly appreciate your help. I was dreading this task as I travelled here this morning. Peggy was all I had in the world since our mother passed away. I was expecting to get a letter this week and maybe see her at Christmas for an hour or two. This whole ordeal has been like a bad dream ever since I got the news.
James's eyes filled with tears, and he blinked fiercely to keep them at bay.
It's terrible, Horatio agreed, gazing mournfully about the ransacked apartment. I can't believe that this room was full of people and gaiety just a few days ago. Everybody excited for Christmas and the New Year. And now this.
I couldn't believe it when the police said it was murder. Why in the world would anyone want to kill Peggy? She had no money. She never hurt anyone. She was the kindest soul anyone could ever meet.
James looked bewildered. I don't know. Unless whoever killed Nora thought that Peggy might know who they were, Kitty suggested. She wondered if he knew about Peggy pawning Nora's things. Horatio shivered.
It's made me feel very uneasy being here alone. Tell the truth, I was relieved when Mr. Rudolph took all the silver out of the apartment last night. I'd been thinking, what if someone broke in? Or if maybe I would be next on the list. I don't mind saying I'm sleeping with a baseball bat under my bed.
Times are hard right now, James agreed. It's why I came to the city. I'm lucky to have my job and a room.
It must be very worrying. Kitty understood their concerns. Have you had the chance to think about where you might go in the new year? She looked at Horatio. The servant shook his head.
Not many positions going to be advertised until January, I don't expect. I've a little money to rent a room and hope I can get a job then.
You have no pension? Kitty asked. The man shook his head.
No, ma'am. I haven't much savings neither. My sister has been ill for a long time, and I send every spare dime I get back home to pay for her medical bills.
I'm sorry, I hope things work out for you. Kitty thought that at least explained why Horatio had no money after working for Nora for so long. She couldn't help feeling angry with Lorena for being so heartless, dismissing a long-standing elderly servant so close to Christmas. It was certainly something she and her grandmother would never have done to an employee of theirs at the Dolphin Hotel. They always treated their staff well and paid generously. The reward had been returned in loyalty and low turnover, with many of their employees being like family. She said goodbye to James Marsh and let herself out of the apartment, insisting that Horatio sit and finish his coffee with James. She took the flight of stairs back down to her father's flat and let herself in with the key. After removing her coat, she went through to the sitting room to find Matt seated at the dining table, spreading butter on a slice of toast.
The tea is cold now, darling. Where on earth have you been? I was getting worried.
Matt jumped up, ready to go make a fresh pot. Kitty dropped the bundle of post on the table and extricated the note she'd found in Peggy's handbag, placing it on top of the newspaper.
Doing a spot of sleuthing, she said.
Chapter 13. Matt set the almost empty teapot down and picked up the slip of paper.
No signature or date, that's a pity. Where did you find this?
He looked at Kitty, who appeared very pleased with herself. Go and make us a fresh pot of tea, and I promise I'll tell you everything. She smiled beguilingly at him as she slipped into the empty seat at the breakfast table. Matt chuckled and went to the kitchenette. When he returned a few minutes later, armed with a hot pot of tea and some freshly cut bread, he settled down to listen to Kitty's adventures.
What did you think of Peggy's brother? Do you think she was pawning those things on his behalf?
Matt asked, once Kitty had told him everything she had learned. He appeared quite shy, very upset over his sister's death, as you'd expect. He seemed like a normal working man. He has a job and a room. From the way he spoke, it didn't seem as if he needed anything from his sister. I don't think he had seen her for a while. He said Peggy wrote once a week to him, Kitty said.
Did he say when he last heard from her? He could be one of the intended recipients of the letters she said she had needed to post.
Matt watched as Kitty carefully spread butter in a thick layer over her bread. He said he was expecting to hear from her as she wrote regularly, and he had hoped to see her over Christmas. He set out very early this morning from his lodgings, as he had to take two buses to get to this side of the city. His post will probably be waiting for him when he returns to his lodgings, Kitty said, before crunching into her breakfast.
You say this note was inside Peggy's handbag?
Matt looked at the creamy-coloured slip of paper. Yes, tucked in a pocket, in the lining with the pawn tickets for those items the police retrieved. Those are there too. Kitty moved the note revealing the receipts from the pawnbrokers.
It's interesting they were all found together. There's nothing distinguishable on this note either to track where it could have come from.
Matt glared at the offending item.
I know, it's so tantalising. It sounds like something a married man might send to his lover, don't you think?
Kitty mused.
I don't know. That seems rather a stretch to me. There are no kisses or signs of affection. To me it sounds more businesslike, Matt said. We shall have to hand all of these over to Lieutenant Tanfield.
Kitty finished eating her last bite of bread.
I suppose so, she agreed,
and wiped her mouth and fingers on the pale blue linen napkin before pouring tea into her cup.
At least we also know now why Horatio needs to continue working, Matt said.
Yes, it's quite awful of Lorena, though, to treat him this way after being with the family for so long. He did say he felt better that Rudolph had taken most of the valuables from the apartment. He was worried in case anyone tried to break in. It was a big responsibility, knowing they didn't trust him.
Matt shook his head when Kitty offered him more tea.
It must be very uncomfortable for him, especially as he is aware he will be homeless and unemployed as soon as Christmas is over, after years of loyal service to Nora's family.
Kitty frowned. Doesn't it strike you as odd? I mean, Nora seemed like quite a kind person when we met her. She took the time to send for us when Pa was ill, and she was raising money for the orphanage. She had to know that Horatio didn't want to retire and had worries about his finances.
Perhaps she considered she was doing him a favour, Matt said. She may not have realised he had so little in his savings and thought after a lifetime of work he deserved to relax.
Kitty didn't sound convinced. I wonder if Nora left him anything in her will. It would be interesting to know exactly what is in her will. I suppose Lorena will inherit everything unless she left donations to charity.
You're thinking financial gain may be a motive for Nora's death?
Matt leaned back in his chair.
It often is, I suppose. We already know from Edgar that Lorena and Rudolph's lifestyle was funded by Nora. I wonder if that would have changed if Mortimer had left Titania and married Nora. After all, if she was prepared to dismiss Horatio, possibly because of Mortimer, then perhaps the gravy train would have left the tracks for Lorena too.
There is still the matter of the missing jewellery, Kitty said. There was presumably no sign of that in the pawn shops. I suppose whoever took it could have tried selling it to a jeweller.
I would hope that the police would have alerted all of the reputable jewellery stores. I know that doesn't prevent a criminal from taking it somewhere less scrupulous, but even so, the stones would be bound to come to light, even if they broke up the set, I'd have thought, Matt said.
Kitty finished her tea and set the cup back on its saucer. Then there is the strychnine used to kill Peggy. Where did it come from?
Matt gave a wry smile. I hate to say it, darling, but I think it's pretty common knowledge that you can get it from rat poison. Every cheap crime novella or gory news story seems to have used that at some point in the plot.
Kitty gave a heavy sigh. True. Alice and I have seen it in quite a few of the films at the cinema. Still, where did it come from in this case? Has the building had a pest problem?
I see what you mean. Yes, it must have come from somewhere and been close to hand if we are to believe that Peggy's death was a consequence of Nora's murder.
Matt could see what Kitty was driving at. Since Nora was killed first, they had assumed that Peggy's death was probably down to something she knew that could identify the murderer. But Peggy could have been the intended victim all along, and Nora died before she could warn Peggy or prevent her death, Kitty said.
That theory could work.
A cold shiver ran down Matt's spine. He hadn't thought of the murders that way round.
But why kill Peggy?
I would love to know what the police have discovered. Kitty sounded mournful.
Well, we can telephone the police station and let Lieutenant Tanfield know you have the pawn tickets and this cryptic little note,
Matt suggested, as Kitty started to clear away the breakfast things. She brightened at this suggestion, and he found the policeman's card from his pocket and went to make the call. There was a lot of noise on the other end of the line when he was finally connected to the right department. Matt was informed that Lieutenant Tanfield was out, and the message would be passed to him on his return. He was forced to be content with this somewhat unsatisfactory answer, and replaced the black telephone receiver in its cradle as Edgar sauntered into the room.
You've missed breakfast, unless you just want some cereal, Kitty said.
Oh, nothing like that for me, dear girl. I don't suppose you could make some coffee, could you? Got a bit of a headache this morning,
Edgar said, as he sank down in his favourite armchair. Matt handed his father-in-law the post and the newspaper that Kitty had collected from the lobby. Kitty glared at her father, then went off to put the kettle on once more. Edgar leafed through the envelopes and slit them open with a small pearl-handled paper knife that he kept on a side table next to his chair.
More festive good wishes, he said, as he extracted the Christmas cards and placed them ready to add to the collection on the mantelpiece.
He caught sight of the front of the newspaper.
Good heavens! It seems we are headline news.
Matt hadn't taken much notice of the newspaper headlines. He had been focused on the note and the tickets which Kitty had placed carefully inside her own handbag now for safekeeping. Edgar shook the paper open and took a pair of gold wire-framed spectacles from his breast pocket. Once they were perched firmly on the bridge of his nose, he peered at the small print. Matt leaned over his shoulder, and they read the report together in silence. Kitty carried in a small, round, enamelled tray with a cafetiere of coffee and a jug of steamed milk. She placed it down carefully in front of her father.
What does the newspaper have to say about Nora and Peggy's deaths? She asked.
Nothing that we don't already know, except, of course, it's all highly sensationalised, Edgar said as he rested the paper down on his knees and removed his glasses. Thank you for the coffee, darling girl.
He poured himself a drink and added sugar. Kitty perched herself on the chair opposite her father and told him of her meeting with Peggy's brother.
That must have been dreadfully upsetting for him.
Edgar shook his head.
I still can't quite believe it.
A sudden hammering on the front door of the apartment startled all of them. Kitty jumped to her feet and Edgar spilled some of his coffee in his saucer while Matt rushed to answer the door. A moment later, a somewhat tearful and distressed-looking Titania was in the drawing room,
Her auburn hair was in disarray, and the coal around her eyes was smudged from crying, giving her a clownish appearance.
"I didn't know what to do or where to go. Oh, Edgar, I am relying on you as my only true friend."
Titania looked at Kitty's father and burst into a chorus of noisy sobs.
"Oh, my dear, whatever has happened?" Kitty soothed, seeing the look of horror on her father's face at the distraught woman's words. "Here, do sit down."
She guided Titania onto the chair that she herself had just vacated. Kitty wrinkled her nose discreetly at the stale odour of whiskey emanating from their unexpected guest.
"It's Morty," Titania wailed. "Oh, Edgar, he's gone. He's left me and I don't know what to do. I'm sure the police think I killed Nora, and then I'll be arrested, and then who knows what will happen to me."
She pulled out a sodden scrap of lace-edged cotton and blew her nose noisily. Matt looked at Kitty and inclined his head towards the drinks cabinet, asking a silent question. Kitty gave a faint nod. Perhaps a tot of brandy might help calm Titania down. Matt poured a small amount of liquor into a crystal glass and passed it to Kitty.
"Here, now have a sip of this, and tell us what has happened to distress you so."
Kitty pressed the drink into Titania's shaking hands.
"Thank you."
Titania accepted it gratefully and downed the contents in one gulp. Matt's eyes widened in surprise.
"You said your husband had gone?" Matt asked.
"He's left me. He said he was still going to go ahead with a divorce, even though Nora was dead,"
Titania wailed.
"We had an argument, and he stormed out, and now the police will arrest me and I don't know what to do."
"Why would the police arrest you?" Kitty asked.
She was starting to think she should have given Titania some of Edgar's coffee instead of more alcohol. Titania wiped her eyes, smearing more of the coal onto her cheeks.
"Because he was going to marry Nora, and I slapped her at the party. Now they think I killed her and poisoned Peggy."
She looked at the newspaper on Edgar's lap.
"It'll be in the news. I'll be ruined. I'll have to go to Mexico or Paris or somewhere."
Her gaze slipped away from Kitty's, and she wondered what Titania was concealing.
"Have the police said that they suspect you?" Matt asked.
"They told me not to leave town, and I have a cruise booked in January."
Titania's volume increased.
"I want my Morty back. He always sorts things out for me."
"Where has Mortimer gone?"
Edgar asked with a bewildered air.
"I don't know. I thought you would know. You're a man. He talks to you."
Titania turned her bleary gaze on Edgar.
"I suppose he may be at his club," Edgar muttered, looking severely discomforted.
Kitty raised an eyebrow.
"Perhaps you could telephone Pa, just to put Titania's mind at ease," she suggested.
Titania sniffled and held her hands up in an imploring gesture.
"Oh, Edgar, honey, please, would you? I just want him to come home so we can talk things out."
Her lower lip wobbled.
"He can't be serious about leaving me."
Edgar sighed and set aside his paper and his coffee to pick up the telephone receiver. After being connected, he conducted a brief conversation and ascertained that Mortimer was not at the club. Titania's face crumpled as Edgar replaced the receiver in the cradle.
"Where can he be? I hope he doesn't do anything foolish."
"Did he pack a bag? Take anything with him?" Matt asked.
Titania shook her head.
"No, he just slammed out of the apartment and said he wasn't coming back."
She looked at Edgar with pleading eyes.
"You must know of some other places he might be."
"I'd have to think, dear girl. It might be better if you give him time to cool off. I'm certain he will come home, especially if, as you say, he didn't take a bag with him," Edgar pointed out.
"Do you really think so?"
Titania's expression brightened momentarily as she dabbed at the end of her nose with her sodden handkerchief.
"Absolutely," Edgar assured her.
Kitty eyed her father cynically. She suspected he just wanted to get rid of Titania.
Everything has been so crazy since Nora's party,
Titania said, giving her nose another dab.
It's dreadful. First Nora, and then poor Peggy,
Kitty agreed.
What happened the night of the party, after Mortimer took you home?
Again, Titania's gaze slid away from Kitty's.
I don't know. I mean, I had drunk a lot of champagne, and my nerves were all on edge. I felt so humiliated and angry with Nora, and with Mortimer. I mean, she wasn't the first little fling he'd had.
She paused to wipe her eyes again before continuing.
I just thought it would fizzle out, you know, like the others. When he asked me for a divorce that night, I was shocked.
Why did you still go to the party together?
Kitty asked.
Because it would have looked strange for me to be missing, and I wanted the satisfaction of making them feel uncomfortable. I don't know. I suppose I thought I could warn Nora off, tell her I was refusing a divorce. I wasn't thinking straight. Then all night she looked so smug and self-satisfied, giving me these little pitying glances when she thought I wasn't looking.
Titania's hands balled into fists, squeezing her handkerchief.
That was when you slapped her? Edgar asked.
Anything to wipe that look off her stupid face. Then Morty took me home. He shouted at me.
Titania covered her face with her hands.
He said I was a lush, and I'd embarrassed him. It was no wonder he wanted to leave me.
What happened after that? Did Mortimer stay with you? I don't recall seeing him again later on.
Kitty tried her best to sound soothing and sympathetic. Again, there was that curious sense of evasiveness.
I don't know. I went to bed with some water and an aspirin. I don't know what Morty did after that. I told that lieutenant that I wasn't sure about anything.
Kitty was pretty certain that Titania was sure, but didn't want to say, and she knew there could only be one reason for the older woman refusing to speak. Either Mortimer or Titania, or both of them, had left the apartment again that night at some point.
When did Mortimer go out again? Was it after the party was supposed to have finished?
Kitty asked, in a nonchalant tone. Titania turned frightened eyes on her.
I don't know what you mean. I told you I went to bed. I don't know what Morty did.
Oh, really, Titania, darling, you are among pals here. Of course Mortimer went back out. I expect he went to see Nora to smooth things over,
Edgar said. Titania's eyes widened, and she opened and closed her mouth a few times, like a goldfish gulping for air.
I suppose you followed him, Matt suggested.
I...
Titania's gaze flickered from one person to another before landing back on Kitty.
What would you have done in my position?
She pleaded.
I was lying on my bed. I hadn't changed out of my frock. I'd just taken off my wings and my jewelry and slipped on my robe over the top of my dress. I heard the door of the apartment open and I shot straight up.
She blinked a few times, as if reliving the events of the evening.
What happened then? Kitty urged encouragingly.
I opened the door of our bedroom and peeked out. The apartment was quiet, and I just knew he had gone to see her, the rotten, cheating snake. I grabbed the keys to the front door from my bag and followed him. He had gone up the stairs. I could hear his footsteps going up from the landing.
Titania paused once more to blow her nose again.
Did you follow him up the stairs? Kitty asked.
Titania shook her head slowly.
No, not right away. My head was a bit swimmy, so I thought I'd wait a while. Give him a chance to get up there. He's not so fit anymore, and there's a lot of stairs between our place and Nora's swanky penthouse.
Her tone was bitter. How long did you wait? Matt asked.
Only a minute or so. I wanted to confront them. Then, as I was about to start up the stairs, I heard the elevator rumble.
A fearful look darted across Titania's face.
Was it going up or down?
Kitty glanced at Matt.
Titania swallowed. I moved to the shadows and peeked out. It was going down. I couldn't see who was in it, and I didn't hear any voices.
Kitty sucked in a breath.
Could the elevator have been taking Nora to her death? And if so, was Mortimer the killer?
Chapter 14.
I didn't know what to do then. I thought perhaps it was the staff leaving, or maybe the last of the guests. I decided to creep up the stairs to see if I could see or hear anything. I thought he had to have made it up there by then.
Titania gave another sniff.
Did you see anyone? Matt asked.
The woman shook her head, making her untidy auburn curls waggle about.
No, by the time I got up to the top floor, everything was quiet. I thought I'd heard the elevator again when I was on the stairwell, so I figured it must have gone back up.
What did you see on the landing outside Nora's penthouse? Matt asked.
Kitty guessed he wanted to be absolutely certain that the woman hadn't missed anything and was telling them the truth.
Titania shrugged. The front door was closed. The landing was dark, and I listened for a minute or two as I thought about banging on the door to try to get them to open up.
But you didn't? Kitty wondered why the woman hadn't made a fuss after going to so much trouble. Titania's shoulders drooped.
The booze was kicking in good by then. I was cold, and I looked down at my housecoat and thought to myself, Titania, what do you think you're doing? So I turned around and went back down the stairs.
Did you see Mortimer again that evening? Matt asked.
I didn't look for him when I let myself back in the apartment. Everything was quiet, and I just went straight to bed. He was in the apartment when I woke up the next day. He told me he'd slept in the spare room.
Did you believe him? Edgar asked.
Titania looked bewildered.
At the time, yes. We didn't know about what had happened to Nora until later, when we heard from Lorena.
Mortimer had certainly appeared very distressed, Kitty recalled, when he had knocked on their door the morning after the party. Was he Nora's murderer? Was he the last person to have seen her alive? So many questions were racing through her mind.
Well, my dear, I think the best thing you can do is go home and freshen up. I'll try and track down your errant hubby and send him back to you, Edgar suggested, looking at Titania. Yes, I expect Lieutenant Tanfield will probably be calling on everyone again, Matt said. You need to tell him what you just told us about what happened that night, he advised Titania as she rose from her seat, ready to leave.
Oh, no, I couldn't. It makes me sound so bad. Morty, too.
She gave Matt a distressed look.
They'll be more convinced than ever that I killed her.
Nonsense, Titania, darling. It shows your honesty. He'll only find out from somewhere else. They always do, and then it would look bad for you. He'd think you were hiding information from him on purpose, Edgar advised in a fatherly tone.
Titania appeared unconvinced.
I don't know.
Trust me, I've had many dealings with the police. Honesty is the best policy, Edgar declared virtuously, ignoring Kitty's shocked expression.
Matt escorted Titania to the door before returning to the sitting room once she had departed. Edgar eyeballed Titania's empty brandy glass.
I know it's before noon, but after hearing all of that, I think I could use a bit of a stiffener, he remarked.
I rather think Titania had already imbibed before coming here, Kitty said.
That was all quite concerning. It may be that Mortimer was the last person to see Nora alive.
Matt looked at his father-in-law.
Do you know where he might be?
Edgar scratched his head.
Well, if he's not at his club, there are one or two drinking dens where he may have holed up, he said.
Do you think he was in the elevator going down with Nora that night? The one Titania said she heard when she was going up the stairwell? Kitty asked.
It's possible, but it could have been anyone. Someone going home, Nora by herself, Mortimer by himself, both of them together, we just don't know.
Matt's expression was troubled, and Kitty could see he was deeply concerned. Peggy could have seen him with Nora after he left the party to take Titania home, Kitty said.
If Horatio had already retired for the night, his room is on the other side of the apartment. Peggy was the only person then who would know Mortimer had called back to see Nora.
She would have told them.